Yes.
Topic. Tonight's theme is Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah. This is a class that I've always wanted to give. Coming up to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, thinking about all the time that we're going to be spending in shul and all of the repetitious things that we're going to be saying and hearing, I just thought it would be a good idea, now that Rosh Hashanah is pretty close upon us, that if we actually went through some of these flows, we went through some of these things, we'd have a better appreciation of what actually we're saying and what's going on and why actually we're saying these things and why exactly these things.
Oh, Monday.
So for tonight's theme, we're going to call it Trumpeting the King, which of course is a reference to the shofar, the trumpet blowing that we're going to blow over Rosh Hashanah. So tonight we're going to be discussing the master, what we actually say before, during, and after the shofar blowing, as well as the symbolism of the shofar and what makes it so symbolic, a little bit of the sounds and the symbolism of the sounds of the shofar, as well as what messages it could take on with us and lead us for in these days of awe, which we're also going to discuss why 4 days of awe. Okay, so let's first start. I believe I'm sharing my screen. And if I am doing that correctly, then you should all be seeing a color-coded copy of the form of the master. Thank you. Okay. Of the form of the master, which contains a parak of Tehillim that we say before the shofar is blown. So basically, we're going to actually, next week, we'll actually go through the order of the Musaf services of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and some of the themes there. So the shofar blowing is actually done before Musaf, after Shacharis, after the Torah is read, then comes shofar blowing, and then as well, there are other times during the Musaf services when the shofar is blown, and we'll discuss how that adds up with all the numbers and the sounds as well. But let's preface it with the Parak of Tehillim that we say before they blow the shofar. This Parak of Tehillim is Parak Mem Vav 46, which comes from Tehillim. And what I've done is I've actually highlighted and color-coded the words which are often repeated in this Parak, which gives us a clue as to why this Parak was the one that was chosen for the shofar blowing. So it's called Seder Tekiah Shofar, the order of the blowing of the shofar. And I highlighted that in pink, Tekiah, which is one of the actual sounds of the shofar. There are three sounds, which we'll discuss in detail further on. Tekiah, Shivarim, Teruah, Tekiah being the long sound, one long sound. And if you look within your paragraph, there's another pink word, which is Tik'u, you should blow. So it has the same color because it has to do with the blowing of the shofar. Another word which we have highlighted are the two words Hariu and Bitruah. Hariu, again from the sound of Tiruah, the shofar sound, and it means to sound the shofar and blasting. So those are color-coded in yellow because that is also a shofar, you know, shofar descriptive word. It corresponds to the shofar. Again, we have in blue, we have Bikol Shofar, with the sound of the shofar, which is what we will be doing as soon as we finish saying this paragraph. And then in the orange highlight, we have five times the word Zamru, or variations of it, which means to make music. Zamru, Zameru, Zamru, Zameru, Zamru. All words which mean to make music, which again, the shofar is a musical instrument that was chosen to be blown on Rosh Hashanah. We're going to see at the end of today's lesson as to why, what is the symbolism of blowing a musical instrument and why that's so important for us on Rosh Hashanah. If anyone could blow an instrument and any music players could blow an instrument, what is so significant about our shofar blowing that we do on Rosh Hashanah? So I'm not going to go through the entire paragraph, but the paragraph is here with the Hebrew and the transliterated English. So it gives us a familiarization of what we are saying, and we can look over that on our own just to be prepared for Rosh Hashanah before we say it so that it becomes a little bit more meaningful when we are saying it. When we first start saying it, the words might seem a little bit new and a little bit daunting. However, we are fortunate, and that is that we have the chance to say it 7 times before the shofar is blown. So you don't need to worry by the time you say it the 7th time. You may have lost track of how many times you're saying it, but the words will definitely grow on you and will become more familiar to you. So I kind of, you know, a hint that I do is I usually count with my fingers behind my hands or, you know, behind my back. I keep track of how many times I'm saying it because everyone's buzzing all around and it's hard to keep up and keep track. So we do try to, you know, we do say it 7 times. We're going to get back to that number 7 times. And another word which I should have highlighted but I didn't is the name of Hashem. You'll see that there is the 4-letter name of Hashem here and the word Elohim, both references to Hashem. And if we were to choose another highlighter, I guess at this point I'm left with green. I would choose the color green or underline it with pen or pencil, all the words which are references to Hashem, and that would give us 7. There are 7 Hashem words that are listed over there, and we'll discuss the importance and the relevance of that as well. What I'd like to do now is share my screen again and give you another page. And I'm going to give you another page, which is actually words and phrases, sentences, which are said after the 7 times of repeating the first paragraph. So the first paragraph is said, thank you, the first paragraph is said 7 times, and then when everybody catches up and the chazan or the Baal Tokeya, the one who is blowing the shofar, is set with those 7 times of the paragraph, they will recite verse by verse the following 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 stanzas, which are different sukkim that are taken from different places, and these are also color-coded. If you look at the first letter of each line, they are highlighted, because if we take the first letter, Kuf, Resh, Ayin, Sin, Tav, and Nun, we get the 2 words, Hira, Satan, that the Satan, the evil being, this evil prosecuting angel who we're going to talk about today, should be ripped, should be destroyed. So we're in essence saying that by saying these verses and blowing the shofar, we are hoping that the Satan will be destroyed and his role and his position will now be terminated and he will become useless to us and useless to Hashem, and then our salvation can come through. And these are the words, which again, I don't want to go through each single word and each single phrase right now, but they're taken from different places in Tehillim and other such things. Once these verses are said one by one in repetitive form, the chazan, the congregation, at that point, the chazan, or the Baal Tokeya, the one who is going to be motzias, the one who is going to be doing the mitzvah for us and be our representative in doing the mitzvah, is going to make the bracha. So the bracha is one of those mitzvah brachos. So it has the words Hashem Elokeinu, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Asher Kiddushanu B'mitzvotah B'tzivanu, that He has commanded us with His mitzvot, and He has blessed us with His mitzvot to follow the mitzvot, Lishmoa Kol Shofar, to hear the sound of the shofar. So the mitzvah is not to blow the shofar. The mitzvah is to hear the shofar. So yes, the person who's blowing it for us is getting a mitzvah because he's hearing his own blowing, and he's enabling us to hear it. But that's actually the mitzvah. The way we perform the mitzvah of hearing it is through the blowing, but the actual mitzvah is not the blowing. So why then is it lishmoa? Why do we have to hear the sound of the shofar? The same reason why we say the word Shema Yisrael, listen B'nai Yisrael, listen to the listen Jewish people. Shema is not just to listen, it's to hear and to understand. It's a deeper level of hearing. You know, we could be talking to our kids, we could be talking to somebody and say, are you listening? And they go, I'm listening, but they're not. What you really need to say is, are you hearing me? Are you understand what I'm telling you? Are you paying attention to what I'm telling you? Is what I'm saying important enough for you to give me your attention? So that's what lishmoa kol shofar, to hear the sound of the shofar, to understand, to comprehend, to pay attention to the sound of the shofar that's coming to wake us up, and so that we have now a choice. We have now a choice of what we are going to do when we hear that sound of the shofar. And what the shofar is supposed to remind us is to make a choice with clarity, with awareness, and with a constructive purpose, so that we can have a constructive and purposeful life. And that is the purpose, the main purpose of blowing the shofar, is to remind us to stop going on autopilot and to stop acting without thinking and to get us to pause, to stop, and to think. Over the summer, my daughter was going back to New York, and I was driving her back to the bus station. I got on the highway, and I was driving, and I was driving, and I was driving, and I was driving, and I got to downtown. And all of a sudden, I realized, I'm not going downtown. I'm going to the bus station. I had missed my exit by miles because I wasn't focused on what I was doing. I was literally driving on autopilot. I'm not sure what my autopilot was because I don't go downtown that often. I don't know where I thought I was going, but I know I was not paying attention to where I was going because I had to retrace my steps, got stuck in traffic, there was construction, and nearly missed the bus because I wasn't hearing. I wasn't understanding. I wasn't paying attention. So we have to hear, we have to listen, we have to understand, we have to pay attention. And that also comes with one of the famous one of the famous words of Chazal that are often quoted at this time of year, and that is Uru Yeshenin Bishnasan. Awaken, you sleepy people, from your slumber. Wake up. It's our alarm clock. And that is why we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. And it's a mitzvah to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. But what we do is we actually start 30 days before Rosh Hashanah. At Chodesh Elul, on Rosh Chodesh of Elul, we start to blow the shofar to start waking us up. You know, some of us, when we have to wake up in the morning, we're not such easy risers. And we know if we set the alarm for a certain time, we're just going to hit snooze. So we try to preempt ourselves, right? And we set the alarm for earlier than we need to get up so we can push snooze and still get up at the right time. So too, the shofar during Elul is kind of like the snooze button. You know, it's to remind us, okay. And then comes Erev Rosh Hashanah, the day in which Rosh Hashanah is going to fall that evening. We don't blow the shofar, though, because we need to make a separation, a difference between the blowing of the shofar in Elul, which is a reshut, it's permissive. You want to blow the shofar? Sure. If you think it's going to wake you up and remind you of what you need to be doing, perfect. But on Rosh Hashanah, it's not if you want to, you can. It's a mitzvah, you should be. So we need to just separate between what you can and what you need to. Similar thing, we have that also on Pesach. Like on Pesach, we have a mitzvah to eat matzah, so we try to not eat matzah on the different customs of how much before Pesach people stop eating matzah, to just kind of make a break and make a separation between, okay, I'm eating matzah today because I feel like it, I like it, versus today I'm eating matzah and I'm showing that it's a mitzvah and that's the reason why I'm eating. So it's a separation. So here's something interesting. Here is a word that are actually, we'll see it in our Musaf services, and it's actually the quote or the actual source in the Torah for blowing the shofar. It says, Tikul bechodesh shofar. Blow the shofar in the month of Tishrei, on the first day of the month of Tishrei. So if we look at the word shofar, which we could translate as a trumpet, or, you know, we just call it a shofar, there's no real word for it. The word shofar comes from the expression of shifru ma'aseichem. Shifru ma'aseichem means to fix and to beautify your ways. We see this word, we see the shorash of shin peiresh, of to beautify and to enhance and to make beautiful and to make special. We see this in the female name, in the girl's name, Shifra. Shifra in the Torah was one of the midwives in Mitzrayim, Shifra and Puah, who were also known as Yocheved and Miriam. And when the Torah introduces us to them in Shemot, when it talks about the midwife, and it tells us about Shifra, it tells us she is called Shifra because Mishaperes es Havlad. She beautified the baby after it was born before she gave it over to the mother. So to beautify. So the shofars remind us to beautify and improve and enhance our ways and to make ourselves. How do we do that? How do we make ourselves better? How do you build something great? How do you make something majestic? How do you make something big? So when you want to make something big, and I think the same thing is true for people with egos, when we want to make ourselves big, there's two ways to make ourselves big. just as there's two ways to construct a building. You can either knock down the buildings around you, knock down the people around you so you look higher, or you can actually build and make yourself better, or you can take a building and keep building until it's higher and higher, and that's how you get a beautiful, majestic, tall building, from growth, not from destruction. So too, if we look in that first parak of Tehillim that we looked at, that parak mem vav, we say it seven times, and we say that Hashem's name is in it seven times. So if we do the math, we come up with 49. 7 times 7 is 49. So, 7 times of saying the paragraph, with the 7 times of Hashem, gives us 49, which makes us think of another math problem that we have in our Jewish life, which is also 7 times 7 is 49, and that is Sfirat HaOmer, right? We have 7 weeks from Pesach until Shavuot, 7 weeks from when the Jews left Mitzrayim until they were able to receive the Torah, because they improved and they got higher and higher each day in their level. Every day of Sfirat HaOmer, 49 days, is another element of improvement, is another characteristic and a way to develop it. There's lots of Kabbalistic sources about what each day is called and what each day represents. And that's what we're doing here also. In our paragraph, by repeating the paragraph 7 times and repeating the name of Hashem 7 times, we are indicating that there's 49 levels, there's 49 steps to self-improvement, 49 ways that we can grow and that we can achieve our potential, just like the 49 days that the Jews increase their potential and increase their level to be able to receive the Torah. We can do that as well. And the shofar is something that will remind us. So now let's look at the names. So all of this is going to combine, it's all going to come together in a nice new package at the end. Rosh Hashanah, the head of the year, it's the new year, and we know that Rosh Hashanah falls on Aleph Tishrei, the first day of Tishrei, and it's the seventh month. Tishrei is the seventh month of the year, which again makes us remember the number 7 in Judaism, which of course the famous number 7 is Shabbos, and just as Shabbos is the seventh day of the week and Shabbos is very special, so too is the seventh month. The month of Tishrei is one of the special and most holiday-filled months of our entire year. And we're going to do something now, which I think we've done it in some of our other classes. We take the word Bereshit, and we can unscramble that word Bereshit, the Beis, Resh, Aleph, Shin, Yod, Saf, and we get Aleph B'Tishrei. So we just gave it a date. We took the letters Bereshit and we turned it into a date, Aleph, the first in Tishrei, of Tishrei. And that is the birthday of the world. It's Rosh Hashanah. The creation of the world began on Rosh Hashanah. And that is why it's called. Other dramatic events also happened on this day, on the day of Rosh Hashanah. And that is Sarah was remembered. Hashem remembered Sarah and blessed her with a child. Yitzchak was born. Chana was remembered also and blessed with a child. And that actually ties in with another name of Rosh Hashanah, which is Yom HaZikaron, a day of remembrance. When Hashem remembers our actions and Hashem remembers what we've done individually, collectively as a people, and when we also remind Hashem of what He has done for us. We'll spend more time on that Zikaron, on the Zikronot, the remembrance part of it, in next week's session. So we also have the other name of Yom Teruah, day of blowing, obviously, comes from the shofar, the mitzvah of the shofar, the mitzvah of the day, and Yom Hazim, the day of judgment. Now, very often in our vernacular, in the English, we give it another name, we give it the high holidays, or the days of awe. So we try to explain that, like, how did Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur become called the days of awe, or the high holidays? What's the significance of that? What does that make us aware of? What is so awesome and high about these things? So let's picture. The simple answer is that judgment, it's a time of judgment. Hashem's court is in session. If you could imagine, you know, Hashem dressed as a judge, and the court is open with a gavel, and there's all kinds of books, and Hashem is judging us. And that's what we're doing. Now, we could stop and think. What is so great about that? I would not be so excited if somebody was judging me and somebody was scrutinizing. right? Let's think about different times in our life when we get visitors, right? If we're a student, then we have to take an exam. We have to write a paper. And we work really hard on the paper, and we give it into the professor to determine if we pass or not. Not a comfortable feeling, right? Not comfortable at all. My kids now are it's been summer, but some of them have been doing, you know, classes over the summer and or getting back reports over the summer. It's not such a pleasant thing. Thank goodness I forgot about it. So that's as a student. In our job, we often get appraised by our supervisor, right? As a teacher, I often have to do what we call a model lesson, or the principal will come in to survey me, or to give, you know, to give some kind of, you know, feedback of how I'm doing, and just kind of an observation for the whole form that they need to fill out. It's not pleasant. I'd much rather be teaching in my classroom, doing my thing without somebody watching me and taking notes on every little thing I'm doing. Imagine a traffic court. You know, you're parked at a meter, your meter expires, you've got a ticket, you want to go down to small claims court or wherever you go to buy such a ticket, and the judge is deciding. It's not a good thing. It's uncomfortable. You're being scrutinized. I could think of more awesome and more fabulous things than that. Why is this poet telling us? It's fabulous. Hashem is judging us. How great is that? Good news, guys. You're getting judged. We could all think of things that we'd rather be doing other than, right? But actually, it's a sign of humanity. The fact that Hashem is judging, and Hashem is looking at, and Hashem is watching us, means that He cares about us. He's watching over us. He wants to have a relationship. He cares about us, and He cares about that relationship. He wants to know what we're doing. He wants to watch what we're doing. He wants to see who we are. He wants to see what we did. He wants to see what our achievements are. He knows what our capabilities are, and He wants to help us to improve. It's a good thing. It is. Being judged might be uncomfortable, but the reason behind it is caring and concern, and makes us feel important, and reminds us not only to make us feel important, but to remind us just how important we really are, and how much we really do matter, and how much what we do, it really does count. Imagine back to that student, right? The student gives a report, works really hard on it, gives it to the teacher, gets it back with a single letter or number at the top of the page. Going through the paper with a fine-tooth comb, not a single comment. Nothing anywhere. Not a spelling mistake check, not a comment, not a correction. Did you even read my paper? Or you just so I hand it in and put a number on the top of the page, toss it to the child, pick another one. Do you care about the work that I put in? The student, of course, doesn't want to be scrutinized. But once they're going through the action and they're going through it, doesn't it mean anything to you? Don't you care if I get observed by my boss and I don't get any feedback? All I get is, good job. Like, really? That's all? I remember giving a model lesson once in a school. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to, you know, say what school it is. Not here in Ottawa, a different school that I taught in the past. They had certain customs that they were very strict about, and certain things that they were very specific to this school that mattered to them a lot. And I remember working really hard on a presentation because I knew that the principal was going to be a servant. And I thought it was a pretty good presentation. And the only comment I got was that I made a mistake in the way I pronounce a certain word, in the way they want me to pronounce it for that culture, right? And I remember being devastated. I remember feeling very hurt by that because, I'm sorry, yes, you know, when I was talking, maybe I slipped, I didn't use the right words, but what about the lesson? What about the handout? What about the demonstration that I did? Didn't that matter? Didn't that count? If I was being scrutinized, I wanted someone to show that they cared and that they recognized the effort that I put in, that I mattered. And that's what the Torah is teaching us. The Torah is teaching us also a child, right? The worst thing that a person could do to a child is to ignore the child, right? When we want to show the child how much we love them and how much we care about them, we pay attention to them. We reprimand them. We, you know, we call them on certain things that need to be corrected and need to be changed. If we were to ignore the child would feel horrible. And nobody needs to tell that child that it's wrong, but there's some kind of inner and internal mechanism that's in them that knows, this is not right, I'm being ignored. Like, do I matter? Do I count? And that's what we're trying to show. Rosh Hashanah is a time to show that we do matter, and that we do. So back to the shofar. Back to the shofar. Why shofar specifically? Why this ram's horn? Why is that the mood that's chosen? We could have picked any musical. We could have picked any kind of drum, any kind of violin, a guitar. But why specifically a ram, and why specifically from a ram? And that is because it reminds us of Avram Avinu and Yitzchak. It reminds us of the Akedah, the sacrifice of Yitzchak. Avram Avinu was known for his 10 tests, for his 10 ways that Hashem came to him and asked him to do something that he followed, and each level was harder and harder than the next. The 10th and final test was Akedah Yitzchak, to see, would he willingly go and bring his son as a sacrifice? And of course he was willing to do it. We know that he didn't need to. All Hashem wanted from him was to see if he was prepared to do it. He didn't actually want him to do it. But Avram didn't know that at the time. And everything that this symbolized to Avram was opposite. It was anti all of his beliefs at that time. At that time there was human worship and human sacrifice. But that was so against everything that Avram was ingrained in Avram. For Avram to fight against everything that was internally told him, this is not what we do, and to be able to do it anyway. And for Yitzchak to willingly lay down and be ready to be sacrificed is so awesome, and it was so inspiring. And the Torah tells us this ayal, this ram that was used as a sacrifice instead of Yitzchak, is used to remind us about the sacrifice. And to remind us of the sacrifice that Avram did, that Avram was about to go, he was willing to forego everything that he stood for to listen to the will of Hashem. And that when we forego ourselves to go and to follow the will of Hashem, it is considered also as if we've given a sacrifice. So Avram didn't actually have to give the sacrifice of his child, he gave a sacrifice of an animal, and it was considered as if Yitzchak was sacrificed. By willingly submitting ourselves to Hashem, it's as if we are also giving a sacrifice. And that is something that we are, on this Yom HaZikaron, Day of Remembrance, we're using this merit as a merit for us to get Hashem to remember us and to lead us and to give us good things in the upcoming year. Another sign the shofar is blown is at the Yovel. The Yovel year is the 50th year mark, and we know that the Jewish calendar goes in cycles of 7 years. Every 7 years is a Shemitah, and after every seventh Shemitah, there's the Yovel, the 50th year. You know what they call it, the Jubilee year, and it's the proclamation of freedom. Sounds a little bit like a constitution or something like that. You know, when the indentures, the Eved Ivri, the Jewish slaves, were required to go free whether they wanted to or not. To know that a person, let's say a person who stole and didn't have the means to repay, was sold as an Eved Ivri, he was sold as a Jewish slave, to pay back the money that he owed to who he stole it from, and to live within a home where he would become a better person and he would be taught and reacclimated into the proper way of society. If he chose to stay when his service was over, he was allowed to, but only until the Yovel year. At the Yovel year, he totally went free. So that symbol of Yovel year is a symbol of freedom. And the shofar again symbolizes freedom to us, that it's in our power to receive freedom for ourselves, of ourselves. Meaning that we have the power to achieve, and we have the power to reach, and we have the power to grow. And yes, there's going to be many obstacles in our way, and there are things that make choices and challenges and make things hard for us. But that symbol of freedom, that we have the power to rise above the challenges and to reach a higher level, the sound of the shofar. So again, the sounds of the shofar, which we already mentioned a little bit before, are tekiya, which is a long sound, one straight sound, teruah, which consists of three sounds, and the shtarim, which consists of 9 chapter sounds. So if you're thinking of the sakia as a long line, or one long sound, the teruah and the shvarim are equal in length, but made up of different parts. So you would have the whole, the 3, and the 9. Okay, for all the years that I can remember, my father has been the one who blows the shofar at Yeshiva Chavetz Chaim in Queens, and I remember him starting to practice at this time of year, and he would stand there. He has a special watch that, as far as I know, I think he only wears it on Rosh Hashanah, because as he's practicing the shofar, he's watching, and I still to this day, I don't know the length of time, but he is very careful, and the length of time that each sound has to be, and the pauses, I don't know if there's length of time between the sounds, I'm not sure. All I know is that they are equal in sound, and that he does actually pay attention to a watch with a second hand to ensure that the sounds actually meet their criteria. So in essence, what we really need, the minimum that we need to hear, is 3 sets of 3. 3 sets of 3, which would give us 9 notes. The question, though, is, what do those notes consist of? How are those notes formed? Like, if we take the 3 sounds, what is the combination, what is the permutation of the sounds to give us those 9? So for all purposes and for practical purposes, 9 is not enough. In terms of being Yosei, in terms of actually hearing the shofar and fulfilling the mitzvah of hearing the shofar, 9 is not enough. You need to actually hear a minimum of 30. So what you'll notice in the Machzor is you'll hear the Tekiah, Shvarim, Teruah, Teruah, Tekiah, Tekiah, Teruah. You know, I don't have it in front of me, but there's all kinds of permutations of the sounds and the orders of how the sounds are to make up the required amount and the required tones and the amount of, I guess we call them syllables or spaces. So 30. So basically, if you come to shul and you're there in time for the beginning of shofar, and you hear them after we've said the paragraph, we've said those stanzas. One second, please. I have to plug in my phone. Sorry about that. So if you've said your paragraph, we've said the repetitious stanzas, we've heard the bracha, you hear that set of notes after the bracha, before they start musaf, and for some reason you need to leave shul, and you don't hear any more bracha, any more strofa sounds, you're covered. You've heard it. Same thing is if for some reason I come late to shul. Has happened to me, like I try to time my morning so I get there in time for shul, but if I miss it and I come late for shofar and I don't hear that set, but I hear any combination of 30, then I'm also guilty of the mitzvah. So somebody who wasn't able to get to shul and somebody's coming to their home to blow, or if you're going to someone else's home and there's another blowing, then the 30 is the minimum amount that you need to hear, that 30 chunk, and it's chunked into sets of 30. All together, there's 100 sounds. Altogether, we hear 100. If we do all those sets of 30 combined, plus then that would make another 10, 30, 30, 30, and 10 would give us 100. And actually, I think in Sephardic customs, I don't know if it's in all Sephardic customs, but they actually blow 101 in recognition of that phrase that we had before, Kira Satan, destroy, rip apart the Satan, the evil prosecutor. If you count up the letters, I believe that it adds up to 101, and that's why they blow one more extra sound to scare away the sucker. So if we see these sounds, and we said that they have different sizes and different spaces, that means they're going to sound different. And even to someone like me, who's, I say, tone deaf, you know, I can tell the difference from one thing to another, but even I can hear a 2 versus a 2-2-2. So I can tell that. So what is that sound supposed to evoke? What's the difference? What's the meaning between the length of the sound and what it sounds like and what it means? So let's start with tekiah, the long sound. It's a long sound that is actually calling to us from the routines of our day-to-day living and to remind us that we should focus on who and what we really want to be. That long sound. Then comes the short sound, the 3 short sounds, the truest sound. 2-2-2. That's more comforting. Not as stark. It's not as severe. It's a comforting sound. It softens us, and it helps us to integrate our thoughts and our feelings and our emotions and to think about what the purpose is of the day. We want to make sure that just because we were jolted into being awake by that long sound, that we're not being impulsive and we're not rushing into the new year. We might be energized and have a renewed conviction. You know, we always have, you know, like what they call for the secular new year, New Year's resolution, right? Every January 1st or December 31st, people come up with a whole list of things that they are going to change this year. And I don't know what the statistics are, but they're pretty high that by January 5th, they're completely forgotten, right? So too, Rosh Hashanah is coming. We have a long list of New Year's resolutions. I was watching, Charlie Harari, and he was giving an example. He was saying how he came to forget if it was Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur, and he was so prepared, and he worked on himself, and he was getting ready for the day, and he wrote out a list of the things that he wanted to work on and that he wanted to accomplish for this year, and he was shaking and rocking and thinking, and then he had his matzah in his hand, and a paper fell out of his matzah. He picked up from the paper from the floor, and it was last year's list. And last year's list, guess what? It had the same items on the list that he just said, oh, this year I'm going to this, and this year. And he stopped and he realized, and it's one of his Rosh Hashanah, you know, talks that he gives about, you know, New Year's resolution. So we want to let it pause. We want to stop for a minute. We want to let it settle in so we can think about it and not be impulsive. We grab too much, right? If you chew more, you know, bite off more than you can chew, then there's less of a chance of it actually being successful. And the shvarim, the long do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, is extra long sound. It's a tugging sound. It's a yearning sound. It's a yearning of a wanting to start again and to show that we want to accomplish what we really want to do. And basically all these sounds, the sounds of the shofar, are representative of our neshama, of our soul, and what our soul wants. It's meant to evoke our soul and then to shake us up and awaken us to the inside of ourselves and what today is and to stop and to speak. So now, let's take a look at something new. We talked about the sukkah. We talked about this evil process. And we pictured the scene before. We said that we imagine that Hashem is the judge, and Hashem is sitting at his throne, so to speak. Hashem is sitting at his table. And the prosecution is coming in. The sukkah is coming. And it's his job to come to Hashem and to convince Hashem why we don't deserve anything and all the things that we've done. That's his job. But someone has to get the job, right? So what happens? He's there, and then as he's about to give his speech, the person gives a speech in the court, deposition, right? He's about to give his whole speech about everything, you know, about everything that we've done, and as he's standing there, he hears this loud sound, which happens to be our shofar. He gets terrified. He trembles, he shakes, he gets confused, and he panics, and he starts running in all directions. What is it about the shofar that causes him to run? Because when he hears the shofar, he hears the shofar gadol. Because there's a pasuk that we say in Musa, by Yom Hahu, on that day, Yitaka b'shofar gadol. Hashem is going to sound the great shofar. The great shofar sound. And it's referring to when Mashiach comes. And we all say, oh, you know, the sound of the shofar when Mashiach comes, that's going to be the sound to liberate us and to free us. So when we blow the shofar, the Satan is standing next to Hashem. He hears the shofar. He shakes and runs because the shofar that he knows about is the shofar of Mashiach. And that's the last sound in the world that he wants to hear, because at that point, he's destroyed. His job is over. He'll be terminated. He's getting the pink slip. He's done and over. And he runs and he's destroyed. Really? How many Rosh Hashanahs have there been over the centuries? Think about who the Satan is. The Satan is the one who can come up. He's a con artist, right? He's a smooth talker. He's sly. He comes up with all kinds of things that we've done wrong. And he's gotten over time, he's caused us to be persecuted and prosecuted. He's done his job well. Is he that gullible? Does he fall for the same trick year after year? Come on, you know? I think the only trick that you could repeat more than once is like with a baby when they finally learn about object permanence, right? And you can do peekaboo with them. It only lasts for so long that they giggle every time you see you and disappear and come back. Is the Sutton so gullible that he doesn't get it? Come on. And that is one of the reasons on our sheet we do have, I'll show those of you online, I'll share with you that sheet soon. We have 10 reasons for blowing the shofar, and one of them is to confuse the Sutton. Why does he fall for it? And the answer is that the fault lies not with him, but the fault lies with us. We've been through Rosh Hashanah so many times in our lifetime. And we know that before our lifetime, there was other people who've been through many Rosh Hashanahs. We've already been jaded. We've already kind of wondering, well, I've been here for this long, and my parents and my grandparents have been here this long. I know and I believe that Mashiach is coming, but he's not here yet. How could he think that? And that's because the Satan knows something that we don't. The Satan knows the potential that, and understands something that we don't understand, the potential and the capability that we have in bringing machines. So we might feel jaded, and we might feel a little bit lost, and we might feel sometimes like we're at the edge. It's so long. I believe he's coming, but is he really? But the Satan knows that he really is. And the Satan knows that all it takes is this much. So when he hears the shofar, to him it's real. He's not jaded. He doesn't have the history that we have of waiting so long, where we're feeling like we've been through so much, it's enough already, is he ever going to come? The Satan knows that he is coming, and he's around the corner, and he could come any second. It takes a little bit. It takes a little bit from us. We're the ones who are skeptical. It's not the Sutton. He knows. He's the one who this time, he knows the truth. And that is why the Chafetz Chaim compares the Jewish people to one organism, to one unit, to one being. Even though collectively we've been spread out throughout centuries, we've been spread out throughout the ages, we've been spread out throughout the years, by countries and continents divided by oceans and by waters. But as a Jewish people, combined as a whole, we're one unit. We've all suffered. I think, you know, it's safe to say that the Jews have left their blood and tears in every continent on the planet. Jews over the centuries have been through so much. Each people and individuals have suffered over this long exile. The Jewish people as a nation have suffered. The Jewish people as inhabitants of a certain country or land have suffered. But the Chafetz Chaim reminds us, we're all one unit. We're all one. And all of that suffering and all of that pain and all of that troubles and travails that we've been through, it wasn't ignored. Hashem heard all of that, and Hashem sees all of that. And every tear that was cried and every drip of blood that was shed, Hashem has that, and Hashem saves that. And Hashem feels that pain, and Hashem recognizes what's going on. And if we, by hearing the sound of the shofar, can feel that pain collectively of the Jewish people, and we can say to Hashem, when we hear that sound of the shofar, we can say to Hashem, okay, I'm doing my best, but even if my tshuva is not complete, could you not only consider me as an individual? What about all the people standing beside me that came to shul today? What about the Jews in the other shuls that came? What about the Jews in the other cities and the other countries? Collectively as a people, look at all of that and combine that to save us from our suffering and to relieve us of all of that and to bring that shofar gadol, that great sound of the shofar, which will signal the coming of the shul. I read an interesting story. It's in a book called A Touch of Purity by Rabbi Yechiel Spiro.
and he discusses that there's a person named Rabsada Kakoin, and I don't know very much about him, it doesn't give a biography about him, who has a book called Receipts a Lila. It's some sefer that he was the author of, and in this sefer, he describes the shofar gadol. He describes this great sound of the trumpet that's going to blow when Mashiach comes. And he tells us that the sound of the shofar is an accumulation of our cries throughout the exile. And it's the cries of all the Jewish people everywhere, in every space, in every land, through every generation and every time. That will be the sound of the shofar. So you might take it to mean that when, you know, imagine a jar. I think even Mordechai Ben David has a song about that. It's a song, but it's a conversation between a father and a son. And the son is asking the father, Daddy, is it true what I hear, that in the heavens there's a cup that gets fuller each day? And then when the cup reaches the top and it gets filled with the tears of the Jewish people and the cup overflows, that's when Mashiach will come, that when it overflows. So, yes, it's symbolic that all of those tears and all of that blood is saved by Hashem and remembered by Hashem. So, yes, we can understand that when that cup reaches its limit and it's ready to overflow, and we're all screaming, stop, it's enough, we can't take it anymore. And Hashem looks at his cup and he says, they can't take it anymore, they've had it up to here, literally. And that's when he decides to blow the shofar to signal the end of days and to announce Mashiach. That's one way of looking at it. But Rav Tzadok HaKohen in his book says, it's not only that it's the sound of the tears that starts the sound of the shofar, but it's the sound of the tears that is the sound of the shofar. That all of those sounds and all of our crying and all of our tears that we've all had throughout the ages will join together to make up one long trumpet sound, which will signal it's enough. Mashiach. And that's it. One more final thing, and then we're going to sum up. So again, it tells us that we're going to blow the shofar. We have something special that the other nations don't have. We're Ashrei Ha'am Yodei Truah. We are the nation that is fortunate because we know how to blow the shofar. We know how to appease Hashem by blowing the shofar. And the obvious question is, well, what is so special about the shofar that the Jewish people blow? Couldn't anyone take a shofar and blow? Couldn't anyone do that? Anyone could take a shofar. And my kids do it all the time. They scare me half to death sometimes when I'm not expecting it. They'll take the shofar out of the showcase, and they'll blow the shofar and rock us off. So anyone could blow the shofar. But what's so talented about us people and our mitzvah of blowing the shofar that appeases Hashem? So the answer is, and the Medrash describes the answer, and it says that when Hashem is up in Shemayim, and Hashem is din, Hashem is having judgment, when he hears that shofar, the judgment turns to rachamim. Judgment turns to rachamim. The judgment turns to pity because we blew the shofar. We heard the shofar sound. So let someone else blow it. Why blow a shofar? Let's get out that guitar that we talked about at the beginning of the class. So Rashi ties in that with a Rashi that's in Mishlei. In Mishlei, there's a similar expression about appeasing man. The lips of the righteous person know how to appease his creator and the fellow man and bring peace between them. So what does that mean? That we have the ability to appease Hashem as appeasing a person. How do you appease another person? Somebody is upset at you. Somebody is angry at you. They're upset. How do you show them that you're sorry? What do? Well, you humble yourself before them. You lower yourself before them. You submit yourself to them and you ask them for forgiveness. And that is what we have. Anyone can blow a shofar. It's not the blowing of the shofar that does it. It's not these phrases and paragraphs that we learned about at the beginning of the class that does it. It's the feeling that comes inside of ourselves when we hear the shofar sound and when we say the prayer that causes Hashem to be. And by causing us to humble ourselves before Hashem, and we submit ourselves before Hashem, that's our secret. We are the only ones who know how to use that sound of the shofar to submit ourselves and humble ourselves before Hashem, and to accept Hashem's reign over us. That's another reason for blowing the shofar on our sheath as well, which is to, just like you inaugurate a king at the inauguration, you know, we're having tomorrow an inauguration of the new rabbi in Congregation Machsiki. That's why we're doing the class on Monday night instead of on Tuesday night. We're inaugurating a new rabbi, and we're bidding a farewell to Rabbi Emeritus of a longtime rabbi in our community, Rabbi Volka. So naturally, by causing focusing that reign of Hashem over us, then we naturally have the ability to regress and to ask Him for forgiveness. Obviously, it's not something automatic. It's not something that happens right away. It's something that does take a lot of work and a lot of time. It's always a lifetime of improving, and it's a lifetime work. But I want to just end off with one short story that has to do with Rosh Hashanah and accepting Hashem's reign over us. And I'm saying this story, I'm sharing it with you, I think it's a pretty personal story, but I think that it puts things in perspective for me, and I think that it was another way of looking at something for me, and you could share with me, you know, what you think about it after. Basically, the story happened, I guess it would be 3 years ago, okay? So our accident happened 5 years ago, the very first Rosh Hashanah that we celebrated after the accident was the day that Nofi was born. It's almost Nofi's birthday. He was born Erev Rosh Hashanah. I think we talked about that one. And my husband was in the ICU until Rosh Hashanah, switched over to the rehab center right after Rosh Hashanah. We had Nofi's birth in the rehab center. My husband had just literally come in the day before. And then he was in the rehab center from Rosh Hashanah until Purim. Okay? So he had been released Purim time. Pesach, we were home. So again, like, that was just a transition, like, over the summer to being home, and the transition of from a rehab setting to a home setting. And Rosh Hashanah was upon us once again, when it could be our second Rosh Hashanah after the end. So no, he was just permanently, just a year, just about a year. So what happened was, it was a very, very long, I'd say, transition time. And we were still in the throes of transition and just kind of, you know, figuring out what it means, what this new reality of ours is, getting used to different care needs and having other people involved in our lives. It was a very transitive time. Let's just leave it at that. And what happened was, it was coming closer to Rosh Hashanah, and I sensed that something was a little bit off in my husband's care. And it was very overwhelming. I wasn't sure what it is. I didn't know what to do with it. And it was a little bit of a tumult. It was a bit of a time of turmoil. And my brother and his wife, my sister-in-law and their son, came to spend Rosh Hashanah with us. So it's Rosh Hashanah. What do? You go to shul. So I went to shul. I had left no clean downstairs at the babysitting or in the charge of one of my kids. And I went into shul. And I sat down in shul. And I felt so sick. I felt like I wasn't there. I was sitting in shul, but I wasn't feeling it. I wasn't feeling like Rosh Hashanah. I just kind of felt absent. And I was sitting there, and I was getting frustrated with myself for feeling like that, and I was just getting frustrated with, you know, still being in the upheaval of transition, and I remember feeling like I was on the verge of sobbing, and I just whispered to my sister, I need to go out. I walked out, and I didn't know what to do. What do I do now? I didn't want to go home because nobody was home. Everyone was still in shul. They were going to be in shul for a long time. So I went downstairs to where they were watching the kids, and I brought Nofi up in the stroller, and I said, I'm just going for a walk. I need to clear out. So between Craig Henry and Center Point, there's a bike path that connects the two neighborhoods. And I was just walking with Nofi from shul to the bike path. I just needed to walk. I just needed to unwind or just reacclimate with myself and just figure out, like, here I'm thinking it's Rosh Hashanah, but I feel like I've had Rosh Hashanah for 3 months already. I felt like my life was on the line. I felt like I was being judged for 3 months. I felt like I don't need Rosh Hashanah. I've been doing this since July and June 20th, I've had Rosh Hashanah. Like, I know what it's like to be judged. Like, I've been, like, you know, life has been on the line for 3 months already. And I was just walking with him, and I was just trying to connect. And it was a beautiful, you know, fall day. The sun was shining. And I'm pushing him in the stroller. And I remember saying things, and just talking out loud to myself, talking to Hashem and saying, it's Rosh Hashanah. I'm supposed to be in shul. I don't feel like I could be in shul. But I know that Rosh Hashanah is the day of the year when we anoint Hashem as our king and we accept him and his reign over us. So I remember saying, I don't know what you have in store for me. I don't know what's going on. I'm still transitioning to the life that I'm going to be living for the foreseeable future. I accept you. I accept you as my king over me, and I don't understand, but I accept you. And I remember just walking on the bike path and saying some of these verses that are in these paragraphs that I mentioned. And I felt so much better. I felt like it was my second best Rosh Hashanah, because I think I had once described my first best Rosh Hashanah when Nochi was born, and I described the atmosphere, you know, when I spent Rosh Hashanah with him in the hospital. This one came pretty close. It's hard to judge which one was better and which one was not. And I remember thinking that I might not have been in shul, but there was so much more meaningful to that Rosh Hashanah than any other Rosh Hashanah I had in my life before, and probably even after. There was just something where I really felt like I made that connection. And I'm not saying it, you know, to make you think that I did something special. It just, I think I'm just trying to show how we can take an ordinary situation and elevate it and make it and to show, like, what the day is all about. And, you know, I hope that I don't need those circumstances to get me to that feeling again, but I hope that I can, to some extent, relive that emotion and recognize that, yeah, Hashem is the king over us, and we're, you know, we're humble and we submit ourselves to his will, and he's the one who's in charge of us, and the shofar is what will remind us of that, and hopefully soon we'll hear the shofar, which will actually signal the final reunification of the Jewish people and the final complete reign of Hashem over all of us. Thank you.
Beautiful, Shano.
If anyone has any comments or anything, questions, then feel free. I think you could turn on your mics again and we could all hear you.
Beautiful, Shano.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Enjoyed it very much.
We are on next week, America Shem, for Tuesday. Next week,
Tuesday,
same time, same place, 7:40 to 8:40. And we will be discussing the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, and then the setup specifically of the Musaf for Rosh Hashanah, and then we are going to focus on parts of the Musaf that are similar or the same in both Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So I'm looking forward.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Okay, great.
Hey,
bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye. Yeah. So the Yetzer Hara, I think, would be our internal, right? The internal negative drive. The Satan would be the external, a form of the Yetzer Hara, but more on a global level. Like, it's not just, like, he's the one who reports Hashem on us, like the tattletale as well. Like, he's the one who, the Yetzer Hara won't report necessarily to Hashem about us. It's that inclination in us that causes us and pushes us to not make the right choices. And the Satan will influence the Yetzer Hara, yes. So by the Satan influencing us, it's like the Yetzer Hara it's that negative drive, the negative force.
The stuff is separate except for
the tattle part is different. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. That was
self-destructive. Yeah. Because after, like, so what is there? Actually, like, I know you're, like, overall, like, I know.
I don't know. I think there was something about just being alone and walking and feeling so helplessly out of control. And just feeling like I was helpless. I didn't know what was going on. I was trying to transition. I was having a